But Kale, I can't help it. I'm just a poet.
You are, and you know it.
Yes, well, I am quite aware of it. Tonight's show is going to be talking a little bit about some hacks, some simple ways that you can make adjustments in your day-to-day life with your dog that are going to, it's interesting because when we make some of these suggestions to new dog owners, they think like, and I was this way, believe me, they think like, what impact would this really have? It doesn't even seem to make sense at this point, but it's amazing how some simple changes in your day-to-day with your dog can give your dog more confidence, give you more reliability, give them some more reliability with their skills. And also, I think it's so interesting because as a dog trainer, I've been training dogs and the can dogs for about 15 years now.
And you're old.
The culture of dogs and dog ownership has changed a fair amount.
Very much.
And not necessarily for the good. I love the fact that so many new dog owners are, you know, have decided this is the time to add a pup to our family. But it is important that you understand, you know, I see comparisons drawn between like kids, humans, and dogs. And it is important to understand that to meet the dog's needs, you need to understand, you know, what their desires are, what their, what's the word I'm looking for? Like what their needs are.
Needs, yeah.
And once you understand that, it helps you understand, you know why they're making the choices that they do. It also helps you to predict some of the decisions that they'll make. We're going to talk a little bit about why decisions are so important in your dog training and the information that you give them. But you know, being a great leader for your dog can change everything. It's the change that I made with that 2-year-old black lab that I brought to training, who was just, you know, out of control, and I didn't know how to make it better. Dan, I just want to stop it for a moment. Lots of links, Luton, our very own, he's in the moderation station tonight. $20 donation to the Canine Cancer Fund. Thank you, Dan, for doing that. Very it is sweet. Definitely a cause that we support. I should mention very briefly, we have a new editor in the moderation station tonight.
I know. New
James
person on the
James is
team.
Joining. Yeah, joining lots of links. So
welcome, James.
Yeah, welcome, James. Just getting back to our conversation about leadership. Yeah. One of the very quickly, I learned that good leadership doesn't mean that you're ruling with an iron fist. Mm-hmm. It means a lot of things. You know, understanding what your dog is capable of, knowing what the challenges are that you have currently, understanding and foreseeing some challenges that you might have, and making great decisions for your dog. These are sort of like rather ambiguous statements. We're going to dive into some specifics, but really think that good leadership is good choice making for your dog. Stephanie Manson, $20 to the NCCF. Thank you for donating it, Stephanie.
Hold on.
Oh.
Hold on. Oh. That was for Dan. You didn't even toot Dan.
Oh, I didn't toot Dan. Albert.
I got you, Dan.
Albert Rosenau, one of our super
students. She's
going to
be
Ken and
I tooting back and forth.
Albert is heading to the, the training facility. Drives a long way, taking parkour, doing a really, really great job.
With Willow.
And Instructor Shannon dropping the super donations, I guess. Thank you, guys. Now, I'm going to toot for a brief period of time, and then I'm just going to hold it for a little bit, and then I'll do my tooting when...
I don't even know. Groups. I don't want to know what you mean by all of that.
I just won't toot for a bit.
And I feel then like you're we'll talking toot, about like layering we'll toots.
Oh, okay. No, I'm not going to layer toots. I'm just going to hold
that's
off.
That's a good idea.
And then we'll just
Anyways,
roll through the
I want to say something about what you had said before about leadership.
Yeah, go ahead.
We find that a lot of times when people have certain issues with their dogs, they want to know how to solve that particular issue. They want like their dog's pulling on leash, so they want to just solve pulling on leash. And they don't understand that there's actually, you know, more to it. And by teaching your dogs to, you know, sit, stay, and not jump up at people, and focus on you around distractions, and respond to their name, and blah, 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 that actually can help solve leash walking.
Right.
Because through all of that training, you're becoming a better leader for your dog. You're becoming clearer about your expectations. Your dog's starting to be motivated to work for you instead of just do things for themselves, because they start to see you in a bit of a different light and go, huh, wow, you seem to know things. Like, this is cool.
Right.
I'm liking what we're doing together. And then that leads to the big picture. So that's really what we're talking about tonight. It's, you know, we often throw out leadership, relationship, and people don't really understand what it means, but it's like a big umbrella. We're not necessarily focusing on one thing. We're focusing on the big picture, because then it makes those one things way easier to conquer.
And
that's how you train a dog. Good night.
Yeah, and we're done. I think it is important. We're going to talk about some actionable steps tonight to make you a better leader. And I know some people come in here like looking for that quick, fast, solution to whatever your problem is. And often people will come to the channel that are already in a situation where they're like, oh, man, this is, again, I get it. This is what I did. I waited till I had a problem. Then I'm like, well, now what? I can't live like this. It's really important that you understand that you might be chipping away at that little problem. And it's frustrating and it's... tiring, and you think to yourself, like, I am overwhelmed. I just can't get through it. Mm-hmm. Believe me, it's worth investing the time. It's worth hanging out tonight, really thinking about how you're going to take these actionable steps and apply them to your everyday life. Mm-hmm. It's really important to understand, and I get frustrated sometimes, so I try not to come across as emotional as possible. But remember, you chose your dog. They didn't choose you. So you owe it to them to really give 110% at fixing this problem so that they can live the life that you imagined. Yeah. I really want you to be thinking about that over the course of tonight's episode. Nancy Moses, thank you for the donation to the NCCF. I'll toot right now. Okay, let's dive into this.
I gave him a toot signal underneath the
worked.
Camera
it
there.
Worked. Let's talk about the first thing that I want you to be aware of, and I want you to be really critical of the choices that you're making and think to yourself, oh boy, am I doing this? Because if you have a problem, I'll solve it. I'm in like a rapping mindset. Talking about leadership. We always talk about follow through. So many questions. People are like, well, what does follow through even mean? And I think there's a lot of confusion around what follow through means. So I know that you work with a lot of our Puppy Essential students and our Life Skills students to like figure out what does that follow through mean in this. And the reality is it's situational and it depends. So let's talk a little bit about that.
So follow through is directly related to setting an expectation for your dog and then actually following up with that expectation. And by doing that with your dog, that starts to instill leadership and it starts to teach your dog to listen better and to tighten up, all of their skills. And essentially what it means is say what you mean and mean what you say. And it can be something as simple as, your dog's jumping up on someone and you've asked them to sit. And instead of sitting, they just ignore you and they continue jumping and wiggling. And then you say, sit again. And they just ignore you and they keep jumping up and wiggling. And you say, sit a third time. Maybe you raise your voice. Maybe you start, pushing your dog or whatever it might be. And all the while, the dog's like, whatever, I don't really have to listen to you. Where we would first talk about prevention so that it doesn't happen in the first place. But if I say, sit, my dog's not responding to me, I'm going to stop my dog from being distracted in a number of ways, which we're going to go over. And then actually make my dog sit, make the sit happen. So I have an opportunity to say, you're wrong, but hey, look at you sitting on a loose leash with a brain. Now you're right. And I'm going to do that without repeating myself over and over and over again without any follow through. If your dog doesn't listen on the first command and then eventually they listen on the ninth command, is that really?
Yeah, are they really?
Is that really helpful?
Yeah.
It's like they kind of listen when they want to, rather than when you want to. And that's the biggest difference between a well-trained dog and an untrained dog, really.
Yeah, and you might think to yourself, well, how do I do this thing? Like, how do I teach my dog to respond to name? How do I do this? Whatever. Mm-hmm. We have a million videos on the channel that talk about that.
Yeah.
And I see lots of links dropping links in the chat to help you guys out with those
and
things.
And we teach all this in our programs as well.
For sure. What this really boils down to is if you want to be a good leader, if you want to be a good trainer for your dog, you identify these problems. So if you have a dog that's jumping up on people, you're going to put in your brain, okay, we need to work on sitting in control position or just not jumping up. And you're going to set aside some time. You're going to go from being that happy-go-lucky dog owner and flip into trainer mode. And you need to help that dog to be successful. The follow-through is knowing that when your dog doesn't respond to their name because you've let them out in the backyard and it's because it's getting colder outside, you don't really want to go out with them to see if, they do their business, that they don't respond to their name means you're going out there with them. You're going out there with them on a line. You're following through. You don't get the response you want. It might even be a slow response. And that's really common too. Maybe you've got an adolescent dog in their teenage phase or their adolescence who they'll if you call them at the park, they'll eventually come to you, but they're going to sniff, you know, continue sniffing whatever they want. And maybe they wait to see another dog moving behind you and then they come to you.
Yeah.
Well, it's the follow through, the say what you mean and mean what you say means you're going to put them back on a line and you're going to train that skill. Mm-hmm. As soon as your dog starts to put together that like, those sounds that my human's giving me have value, they're going to start to put together the idea that that skill specifically means to do whatever you're teaching.
Yeah.
But also like your voice has meaning. Your voice, you know, has influence all the time. Before we get on to number two, I hope you understand what follow through means. Okay, go ahead.
Also, we're getting behind on the twos.
I know.
We'll talk about it in a second. Follow through also is not about, there's a difference between follow through and like begging the dog to do it.
Right.
What made me think of that is when you said, if your dog's out in the backyard and they don't listen, you know, you need to go out and do something about it.
Yeah.
But what you go out to do about it is important, because what most people do is they're like, oh, and then they get the dog's toy or they get
cookie
the dog's bag. Cookie bag.
Yeah.
And then they think, well, I'm following through because I'm making it happen. But what you're not understanding about dog training is that if you do that, what will happen is the shaking of the cookie bag is going to be what calls the dog in. And now we're bribing the dogs rather than following through. So there's other ways to follow through by using leash, by using good timing, by using body language, all of those types of things. And these steps are what we use in order to not have to be dependent on something in the future. We don't want to have to be dependent on the cookie bag, the bait bag, the leash, the long line, the collar, whatever it might be. We don't want to be dependent on those things. We certainly could use them to teach it, but there's a big difference between bribing and what we are talking in terms of follow through.
Absolutely. I want to say a huge thank you to Toya Mays for the donation to the NCCF.
Thank you.
An anonymous donation, $20 to the NCCF. Bonnie Kraft donating $20 to
thank
the NCCF.
You.
And another anonymous donation for $30 to the National Canine Cancer Foundation. Thank you guys for
That's
doing
awesome,
that.
That's awesome, guys. Thank you so much.
This is a cause we really believe in. And because we get to meet so many incredible dog owners and their dogs every year, we know how impactful it can be. And personally, we know how impactful it can be. So thank you for donating. We really do appreciate it. Okay, we've talked a little bit about follow through, why it's important. Let's talk a little bit about putting your dog in situations throughout the day where they're less likely to make mistakes. Now, whether this means that you have a little tiny puppy in your home and they're having accidents and you're not managing them correctly, or this means you're taking your dog to the park and letting them off leash and then struggling because they just don't care to come back. Let's talk a little bit about putting your dog in situations. Let's talk specifically about these. Maybe you're at home and you have a dog who loves to jump up on people. Let's talk about the steps that you can take before you even get to the park or wherever, on your walk, the sidewalk, that would be good for that dog.
I was actually walking the other day and with my dogs, and I walked by a house and nobody was home, but the dogs were all at the big window going absolutely stark raving mad at the window. And I thought to myself, that's dog trainer self. That's not very good prevention.
Right.
So, and what makes me think about it is if my dog's being allowed to do that while I'm at work, they're jumping and they're locking onto people walking on the street and they're getting that high of jumping and moving at the window, it would be not very surprising to take that dog for a walk around the block or to go to the park. And then when people and dogs walk by, they start jumping and lunging because they've just rehearsed that all day long. But people don't understand how that's put together. So think about the rehearsal thing. This is sort of goes back to the prevention and that type of thing. What were you asking me about the park?
The jumping up specifically. Like how does someone...
Oh, of course, yes.
You know, what steps would they take?
Yeah, so the thing that people don't really know about jumping up is that it's a very self-rewarding behavior. And one of the reasons why it's really tricky for people to fix it is that a lot of people try to address jumping up after the dog's already jumped up. And I'm going to say that again because it's
Yeah.
It's not really easy to understand. So if a dog is already jumping up all over somebody, and then at that point you're trying to address it, it takes a lot longer to actually affect change with the dog because they've already committed the crime. They've already had the opportunity to jump up and have fun doing that. Or maybe, you know, the person that they've jumped on have been like, oh, hi, puppy. And like, you know how people, I might work a sit. I might do whatever. I might put my dog in the crate when somebody comes to the door so that they can't rehearse running to the door when I'm not ready to kind of go through the training. So knowing your dog and knowing the situations so you can make better choices will make such a difference in how fast you start to fix a problem. But lots of people put all this work into it and then they're like, okay, I did my training there. Yeah. And then the other, you know, 12 hours of the day, the dog's rehearsing it or they're doing something that kind of encourages is what I'm looking for, that bad behavior because they don't realize that this and this actually are connected.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that understanding management, how to manage your dog, whether it's a house line, a long line, a leash.
Baby gates.
Yeah. Not making the choice to let the dog rehearse it. I think you hit a point there that I think so many new dog owners don't quite realize is that for some dogs, the barking is enough. That's satisfying enough. Yeah. The value of being able to bark at something.
It's like the dogs who are barking at the window, like I said. They're not chased. They're not getting to chase. They're not getting to jump on me and chase my dogs. But they are having a rave in their living room there. And that is rewarding. They get a big rush of adrenaline when that happens. Yeah. Also, they're barking at the window. And naturally, I'm going to walk away from their house. So the dog goes, whoo. That worked.
Man, I'm
powerful.
Look
at what I can do from behind this window.
The teeny tiny little.
Yeah, and then things just get worse and worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
But again, we might not have window barkers here, but take that formula and you can apply it to any dog behavior. It's the same process that happens in all these situations that we don't even realize that we're making our own problem worse by the scenario that we're putting our dog in.
Yeah. So we've talked about follow through. We've talked about setting your dog up. These are all great leadership decisions for you.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the dog's age is, doesn't matter what problem you're working on. We need to talk a little bit about get your dog earning a reward. When we start using the McCann method, when we start training puppies, we use a lot of food because it's a resource that the puppy or the dog in training naturally finds valuable. If they don't find food super valuable, we'll figure out a way for either the food to become more valuable or we'll find a reward. It is valuable, but rewarding your dog for no reason or rewarding them with poor timing can really set you back.
Yeah.
Now, this is something that I found really impactful when I was learning to train my own dog and then understanding how to communicate that to students, to you at home, was helpful. And I sort of changed the relationship with dogs and dog owners. Giving your dog food for no reason while they're in training, like we'll give a puppy a treat because they're cute once in a while,
yeah.
Or nowadays we have trained dogs and we can just give them a treat because they did something cute or whatever. But when you have a dog in training, it's really important that you hold that food to a little higher standard.
Yeah.
So if your dog walks up to you in the kitchen and they're just standing there begging for a treat and you reward them, all of a sudden the dog thinks to themselves like, it's really easy to get food here. I just have to go near my human. But if you said like, whatever, if you ask your dog for a behavior, ask for a sit or a lie down or a go lie on your bed, which we talk about in a lot of our puppy videos. We have lots of puppy series where we're training our own dogs or we're training a family member's dog or a friend's dog. And we'll get the dog to work a little bit for that food. Boy, oh boy, does it change your dog's understanding of what they need to do to be rewarded.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, your dog's going to be working. We'll often use like their breakfast, their meals for exercises. So when we give them their breakfast, we'll teach them luring. You know, when they're an adolescent dog in training, we'll ask them to go lie on their bed or do some behavior that they're capable of or will work through, and then they'll be rewarded with the food. It's like you going to work and being paid for doing nothing.
Yeah.
You know, you need to put in a little bit of effort and then you get paid. Same rules apply for your dog. And when you start to think of like, oh geez, I'm just, the dog they're not doing anything really and I'm feeding them or I'm rewarding them, if you can minimize those situations and just get them to do something, anything, and then reward them. And it can be something as simple as going outside. We've mentioned this before. Actually, I'm going to hold that. If you have a dog that pulls on leash, hold on tight. We're going to come back to a very important win that you need to get to teach your dog to stop pulling on leash. First, I want to talk about this exercise that every single dog owner that's in the chat tonight can find valuable. And this is an exercise.
Oh, that is that my little baby?
It is. It is. You guys are going to see in just a sec.
It's his birthday today.
Oh, perfect timing. I meant to do that.
No, you didn't.
So, you want this?
I would love this.
This is an exercise that I found really helpful when I had my two-year-old dog who I was kind of teaching her that I was worth listening to, and I'd already devalued myself a whole bunch. So certainly every single new puppy that we get, and every puppy that's mine, I'll do this exercise a lot with. In fact, dogs that are in training that are take food a little bit rough or are generally kind of just making the wrong choices. You're like, no, he's a bit of a troublemaker.
Rammy.
This exercise is perfect for them. And I want to bring you guys in. So how old was Five? This, you're going
to
see this puppy
here. I
don't
know. I see what video you're using.
So Five would have been like, what, 10, 11 weeks maybe?
Yeah, 11, 12 weeks
something
maybe.
Like that. So this is an exercise that we call You Decide.
This is our youngest dog, Five Alive.
Mm-hmm. And maybe you can kind of narrate a bit as to what's going on. I'm going to start playing it, okay? There's two clips.
Okay. So, oh my God. Yeah, he's really young here. Oh my God. So, pause it for a sec. So what it looks like right now is that Five is not interested in the toy, but it's actually quite the opposite. So what I am working on here is a concept called rule outs, and it's a self-control exercise that teaches him that if you do not go for this distraction, I will give you the distraction and play with you. So I'm moving the toy around and I'm waiting for him to show me some self-impulse that he's not going to jump for it. And then I'm going to give him permission to play. And that again puts me in the driver's seat. It gives me a bit of an opportunity to be a bit of a leader, but we're doing it in a really fun game together. So this puppy has crazy toy drive. He is manic about toys. But I had done one or two sessions, I think, prior to this. So you'll already see that the training is starting to work.
Oops.
Oh, there he went for it. Actually,
so just explain what happened.
Yep. So that they can see it in action.
I mean, this is sort of like mid-clip. This is our house is so full of dog training when we have a young puppy that like Kale will be doing something, and
I'm like, stop, I need to get a second.
I got to get him somehow to record this. So Kale's working on this exercise. And then he got up.
So because he got up, I didn't yell at him or anything. I just pulled the toy away and said, nope, you can't have it then. And then now he says, okay, maybe I'll try something else. So he's offering a little. I don't care what he does, whether he sits down. I don't care what he does here. All I want him to do is just back off. And then and then when he does that, you'll see what I do.
Did you see how specific Kale was? Like, she saw that he was about to get up, so she had to make it a little bit easier for him. The goal of your training isn't to make the dog fail. It's not to test them all the time. It's to allow them to be successful and then reward them for that.
And one of the reasons why this is going well is my timing is really fast. I didn't wait for him to get all the way up. Yeah. I was reading his body language, I thought, well, he's thinking about getting up. So I reacted and I was able to do it quickly, and then he didn't really end up making an error because I was so fast.
Your border collie's coming out in you. Okay.
Now, what was Kale's criteria for this? Like, what was her expectation was he was in a lie down.
Yeah.
So she's not going to make it more difficult until he does that thing, until he offers that behavior. There we go.
Good boy.
And the big payoff.
Oh my God, he's so cute.
The big payoff, and this is Kale. Now we take our dogs into our classes. You know, there's all kinds of opportunities for socialization.
He's a little bit older here.
Which is not puppies meeting other puppies. It's dogs experiencing new things in our classes. So This is Five Alive from, might have been, what's the puppy class?
Yeah, so he's probably 12, 13 weeks here.
Okay.
Like just a couple weeks later.
Now, this is a variation that you can try at home. It's a little bit easier. Well, this one actually isn't. You can hold the food in your hand and close your hand on it really quickly. But I guess this is a little bit more advanced technique. Because you saw Kale working that exercise at home, mm-hmm. she's able to progress to make it a little bit tougher. If you have super fast hands, you might be able to get away with this if you're able to grab that treat in time, but watch what she does.
So he remains in position as I throw the cookies on the floor. Oops, and he got up. I didn't release him, so I'm just going to make him lie back down again. Throwing the cookies on the floor, and I'm not telling him to stay here, guys. I'm just having him make the choice himself. There we go. Did you see that? He was going to get it, so I covered the treat. That happened very fast. You should do it again.
Now, another
That's thing, how fast it has to go, though, so yeah. that the dog understands.
Another thing I want to point out is some people I've seen in our comment section, because we've done an exercise like this before. People are like, oh, you can't give the dog the food that you just, you know, tried to have them resist.
Sure you can.
That's exactly what you want to do, because you want to reward them with that thing that they chose to not take because you gave it to them.
Mm-hmm.
When you understand that your dog training allows your dog to have reward that comes through you, instead of just from you, got a bug in my arm. Instead of just from you, it really allows you to see your training a little bit differently, because your dog's offering something, working for something, and once they give you that thing, your food comes through you. I find that description helpful. Maybe it's more confusing for you. I don't know.
So he went to go grab the treat, so I just stopped him. There we go. I'm moving the food around once he's successful. So I get him waiting for the down, throwing the treat. If he holds the down, then I'll reward him. Again, see how specific I was? I was going to go give him a treat there, and he was about to get up, so I pulled it away. So I want to be very black and white. You don't get the food unless you hold the down. Now, you could also do this with the dog in a sit as well. I was just choosing to do a down both times there, but I also do the same exercise with a sit. But it's such a great exercise for the dog to learn how to... lean into me for information from there. But, oh, I miss those days. He turns 2 today.
Yeah, Tango. Bonnie Kraft, one of our Heart Dog supporters, says in Personal Life Skills 2 right now, Tango celebrated his first birthday at her class yesterday with Steve and Janice.
Look at that.
So happy birthday to Tango.
Amazing.
So understanding that your dog's going to earn their rewards is a valuable tip. And doing some of those you decide games are really great. Any dog, honestly, we'll work on them with older dogs too.
Yeah.
You know, just for the sake of working on it. It's a great opportunity for your, yeah, it's fun for you, it's fun for your dog. And surprisingly, people think like, oh, this is, I mean, what good is that? It exercises their brain as well. Like, it makes them tired because they have to think through it. But we need to talk about natural training opportunities. I told you I was going to hold off on the statement or on the tip for leash walking training. There are going to be a million natural training opportunities that come up throughout the day for you and your dog in training. And taking advantage of those is the difference between doing the structured formal training and out in the real world. It's like that balance in between, because you're preparing for these natural training opportunities mm-hmm. and you're planning what you're going to do for the natural training opportunities. And then real life interaction with your dog becomes a training opportunity.
Yeah.
Can we talk about, like, let's just imagine a day in the life with a new puppy owner, maybe at home, maybe you have a young dog, maybe it's an older dog. Talk about what you would do, how many natural training opportunities you might have through the course of a day.
Yeah, like a bagillion.
I don't know if that's a number, probably a lot of zeros.
That's my favorite number. So, and what we mean by natural training sessions is that I'm not like setting time aside to like get my bait bag on and like go to my specific spot to do my training, which we don't really recommend that you do. This is like, how do I train my dog in situations where I already am interacting with them,
yeah.
and I can apply my training and my rules and my expectations and my rewards and all those things into everyday things that I'm doing with them already. You know, getting your puppy out of their crate to take them to go outside, there's so much training that can be done in that,
yeah.
you know, 15-second interaction.
For sure.
You could teach them not to door bash. So, even, you know, if you go to open the door and they decide to just bowl you over.
Pretty common.
You can work on teaching them to stay calmly in their crate, so you can open that door completely wide and they'll wait in there until you've got their leash or line attached and you say, okay, and then they'll come out. You can train them to come out and just sit for a moment and be calm instead of jump all over you or, you know, be really wild. You can have them go in their crate for a reward. You can have them go in their crate for their meals. There's lots of things you can do around the crate. When I go to the door to let my puppy outside for a pee at our house, you open our front door. You have to go down some steps to get to our side lawn. And we don't allow our dogs just to run into the driveway, you know, on their own free will, especially when they're puppies.
Yeah.
So when we open our door, we train all of the puppies to stay on the top step until we're ready to go down together. And so, you know, when we're going outside, I have my leash on, I have my cookies, and I work my puppy. I help my puppy into a sit position. I reward him a few times. And then, okay, and then off we go. And we do that every single time we go out the door, which is many times a day because of bathroom breaks and exercise and all of that type of thing. And it gets to the point where I don't even know how old Five was when he started to do this, but I would be like shutting the door behind me and he would already be sitting on the step looking and being like, hey, look at me, I'm doing what we do. Not because he's some amazing, you know, smartest dog ever, although I think that he is. It's because that's the rehearsal. And that was rewarding to him. All I have to do is sit here on the top step and you reward me. Cool. I can do that. But there's all kinds of things you can do with your dog that you can provide a bit of structure and rewards, mold and shape your dog into doing what you want. You know, when we had him as a puppy cooking dinner, you know, we would have a dog bed nearby where the stove was. And we would train him to lie on the dog bed and remain there so that, you know, if we had to open the oven or if we had to do something, he was learning. And it got to the point where we would start getting stuff ready for dinner and he would just go to the bed all by himself and lay there with little paws crossed and being like, hey, this is what we're doing, right?
Very cute, wearing a bow tie.
Yeah, and again, because we were showing him the way, we weren't just letting him run free willy around the house just doing his own thing. I don't know why I said that. We were influencing him to make right choices all of the time.
Yeah, that was a really cool example when we started to see him. We would start to put pots on the stove and he'd go lie on his bed.
Yeah.
I wish we had have documented all of that because that would have been pretty powerful.
And why that works is because of good timing.
Yeah.
As a dog, they read situations and he goes, he thought getting ready was his command, his cue for going and lying down on the bed. Because we did that role rehearsal so many times. It's our dogs also aren't allowed to go upstairs without us. And, you know, there's been lots of times in like getting from the couch to go to bed, I'm like half asleep and I walk up the stairs and I turn around and I think, where the heck is Five? And he's waiting at the bottom of the steps for me to release him because we did that his entire time he was a puppy. And again, it's just they learn to just do the thing because of the good training.
Sometimes we're a little bit late for the train station because the studio is actually on L3 underneath where the trains come in. I'll go down and if everybody's at the top of the stairs, I'm like, okay, let's go. And we get to the next set of stairs. Okay, let's go. So that's why occasionally the train station will start a little bit late.
People are commenting on how many birthdays there are. There are so many birthdays right around this time.
Yeah,
it's so funny.
People with, if you are struggling with a dog who is pulling on leash, and I know this, I empathize, I'm with you. The moment you get maybe you even say walkies, I don't know, whatever you say, and your dog's like, there blows their mind, they run to the door, they're so excited, you clip on the walkies? Leash, and then you get dragged down the street. One of the natural training opportunities that you should be exercising, everyone should be, should be exercising, is that moment. All you need your dog to do is sit and not run out the door. So simple. And the thing of value, you don't need treats even in this situation. You can use them, but you don't need them. The thing of value is getting out the door. You know, that whether you're rewarding your dog in position or just praising them, they know that getting outside is so valuable that they're going to work for it. If you can start every single walk with that kind of control, it changes the next 700 steps. Mm-hmm. I'm arbitrarily picking numbers, but It's the same thing.
Not a begillion.
Right. Exactly. It changes the next, you know, that whole start of the walk. It's great, especially this time of year. Maybe you're living in a colder place. We're here in Ontario, Canada, where the snow is flying already. The steps get icy. The laneways get icy. Wouldn't it be nice if you had a dog who would just walk politely at your side mm-hmm. and not turn into a snow dog and, you know, drag you down the street? It all starts at those first couple steps out the door. This is a natural training opportunity that whether you have a leash walking problem or not, you should be taking advantage of. Yeah. A handful of videos that talk actually about this specific behavior. I don't remember which ones, like nothing springs to mind. Actually, Instructor Carol has one, leash walking training for dogs that are always pulling or something like that. Great example with a golden retriever who was a monster puller. And Carol works through this. It's not going to happen right away either.
The video that is it coming out on Saturday?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Well,
we have a few videos.
We just shot one where we did this with a dog outside.
Right.
So I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know when it's coming out, but that will be a really good one.
Yeah. And when that happens, we'll link it. We'll post it under this video.
Yeah.
We'll go back. So those natural training opportunities are so beneficial. Maybe you're outside. Maybe you have a young dog in training and you're working on potty training. You take them out for a pee. You're in a distracting environment. What a great opportunity to work on a response to name. What a great opportunity to play with toys and play tug and get your dog engaged with you. These are natural training opportunities. They're such easy wins if you set them up right. And this is how you build that bridge between formal training that's in the house and leash walk, whatever the skill is, and outside in the wild and crazy environment that you're going to live in. Wouldn't it be nice if you had a dog who wanted to choose you because you've gently introduced them to some of these challenges? There's lots more natural training opportunities that we could identify in a day, and some are maybe specific to you. This is where our online training programs or in-person training programs are so valuable. Maybe briefly talk about how we would work through some things like that in online training or in-person training.
Yeah, Ken said we're going to work on all of the – we teach all of the things that you want to know for sure. But the big thing about our programs is – the feedback and the interaction that you're going to get from the
actual
the instructors.
Dog trainers.
And this is something that we've been able to do with our online classes. I know sometimes people are apprehensive to take an online course because they feel like they need to like go to the school and like be around the other dogs and be around the other instructors. And that's great. Obviously we do that too. And we think that that's wonderful. But if you're not within driving distance to us, we have created a program where we're going to teach you how to create those distractions for your dogs. And we're going to work on giving you feedback so that, you know, when you're out practicing and you are having trouble, you're not really sure what to do, you can ask us questions, you can send us videos, and we can review it. We meet weekly to do live coaching calls with all of the groups. You get to listen and hear other people's problems and see how we problem solve their things. You get to learn. You think, well, I didn't even know I had that problem, but now I know what I need to do about it. The community is really incredible.
And don't just take our word for it. I see some of our students in the chat, so you can ask your questions there.
Yeah.
And see the great feedback. We have some amazing students.
And the cool thing is you can start anytime.
Yeah.
Literally tonight. And you could join our call next week.
I'd like to know, with our next point, I'd like to know how many of you guys, this is your first live stream. You know, we like to cater the language we use or the information that we give based on your experience. So if this is your first time here, the first time in a live, I want you to type new in the chat. You know, just type new. And that'll kind of give us a sense of where we need to go with this next point. But this next one is really important, and it is often hard to understand for someone who has given their dog all of the freedoms in the world, and they're struggling with these behaviors. It's something,
and they wonder why their dog's not listening and taking advantage.
Right, exactly. Or they're struggling. You know, you're working on something, whatever the thing is, jumping up, barking, digging, whatever, and it's not. You can't fix it. You're like, what? Why? What is happening? Why is this dog constantly peeing on their bed? Why is this dog constantly getting into trouble with the neighbor's dog? Like, we need to talk very honestly about the decisions that you're making. So I just want to know before we get there.
Yeah, I can give you a real life example. I was talking with a student just the other day who just started a new program, so the dog doesn't have any training really yet, just started. And their big concern was the dog was, you know, doing a lot of barking and jumping at the other dogs, and that was really frustrating for them. And after about a 5-minute conversation talking about what they were doing at home, I started to realize that I was not surprised that the dog wasn't listening to them, because the dog never really wore a leash. It was allowed to run free in the backyard all the time. They weren't using a crate. It was allowed to go in and outside whenever it wanted. It had a doggy door, so there was no control there. They were free feeding the dog, so the dog could eat whenever it wanted to. So there were so many things that the dog basically literally didn't need a human for. They could just basically run their own life, and everything that they needed in life was just kind of there for them, but it had nothing to do with the humans. And so when the humans stepped in and tried to get the dog to like not jump and pull, the dog was like, well, who are you? You're not in charge of me. I get to do with whatever I want. So one of the things that we try to get across to our students is how controlling resources can really help you establish better leadership, and that can turn the tables and whether your dog thinks that you're worth listening to. But a lot of people don't understand what controlling resources is.
Absolutely, yeah. So what Kale was alluding to that whole time was controlling your dog's resources. And resources might be things like toys. It might be things like, it could be lots of things. Bedding. It could be access to locations in your home.
Access to furniture.
Access to furniture, access to all of these things. Food is an important one for sure. Mm-hmm. But controlling the resources definitely changes their value system.
Yeah.
And it allows you to get some leverage with training, especially those stubborn nuisance behaviors that you're struggling with.
It also prevents you from using those resources to be used as a reward. If my dog gets food all of the time, I'm devaluing the importance of it. So then why would they work for food for me?
Well, talk a little bit about what free feeding is.
If my dog is allowed to get up on the couch whenever they want, and then I'm now saying, you're not allowed on the couch, and then maybe I get to the point where I can let them on the couch, that would then be a reward. I'm opening up a resource to say, you're being such a good dog, you're listening so well, now I'm gonna you know, let you have a little bit more freedom in return. But if the dogs are given all of those things in the first place, it takes away our opportunity to use them as an opportunity to gain more leadership, but more importantly, use those things as a reward for good behavior.
Yeah, and Kale says giving your dog access to food, she means you should be meal feeding your dog.
Yeah, of course we're not like not feeding the dog.
Right.
I guess we should say that because some people might not know what that means. I'm sort of
This dog is why trainer there's terms. a bunch of new people, so yeah, we should slow it down a little bit.
What we mean by free feeding is that you would put food down for your dog at whatever time in the morning, and that you just leave it out and the dog can kind of graze and eat whenever they want to all throughout the day. Now, that's what free feeding means. So they're getting their however much food you're giving them, but they just kind of can go and get it whenever they want to. Yeah. And we highly, highly recommend that you do not do that with your dog for so many reasons. There's health reasons, there's weight reasons, there's knowing when they're sick or they've eaten something.
Yeah.
You know, if your dog stops eating, like our dogs eat their meals within like 30-40 seconds. If I put my dog's meal down in the morning and for some reason one of them doesn't eat, immediately I'm like, oh no, something's wrong. You know, their upset belly, or maybe they've eaten something. It shows me right away that something's off, and then I can help my dog very, very quickly and efficiently.
Yeah, our vet often says, you know, you need to monitor your dog's ins and outs.
Yeah.
And that can be a great indication of their health.
Yeah.
I've spent 25 years in emergency services on the medical side, and dogs aren't great about communicating their symptoms, so you have to be really aware of their signs. One of the signs that you might see, because so many dogs are stoic, and you know, would never let you know that something was wrong, but if they're not eating or they're not pooping, that's a real problem. So free feeding, along with all of the other reasons that it's a bad idea, that's a really important one, because you can't pick up on some of those signals. So controlling the resources, so meal feeding, once they understand that the food comes from you, again, we talked a little bit earlier in the show about using their meal as part of your training routine. But that also means like having 70 chew toys out on the floor if they have a chewing problem. Or here's a huge one, letting your dog sleep on your bed and you're struggling with all kinds of things. I want to talk briefly, you'd do a better job of this, but can we talk briefly about You know, when that's okay.
When we do that with our dogs?
Yeah. Or no, when they should do that with their dogs. Yeah. You know, when, how do they, how would you know at home when that's okay to let your dog up on the bed and when it might not be a good idea?
And just so you know, we're not against these things. No. You know, we're not the type of dog trainers that like the dog must have to be on the floor and blah, 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 blah. We don't feel that way. You know, my dogs sleep on the couch beside me. They sleep in my bed. They're, you know, I'm always have them close to me.
Yeah.
However, I don't do that right from the beginning. And this is something that we tell our students is that if you're having any control issues, like major pulling on the leash, the dog won't stop barking when you ask it to, jumping on you and other people a lot, nipping and biting at you. Those are all situations where the dog is kind of pushing your leadership a little bit and your ability to get them to listen. And so sometimes taking away opportunity like sleeping in the bed or getting up on the couch beside you where your status is sort of an even playing field at that moment can sometimes blur the waters, and that's something that we would suggest. The other thing too is, like, if your dog was on the couch or on the bed, would you be able to, with only one command without yelling, be able to say off you get like that,
right,
and they get up and get off immediately? Could they do that? And if they could, probably means you have pretty good control in that situation, maybe, then you could open up. But if your dog's not going to listen, you know, that's maybe you shouldn't be giving them that freedom in the first place until you can train a bit more and get to the point where you can do that. Also, if you don't want your dog on the bed or on the furniture, that's okay too.
Yeah.
That's all. It's all personal preference. We have some dogs that do come on the bed. We have some dogs that don't come on the bed. It's not about that. It's about, what are their listening skills like?
Yeah.
How much are, how respectful are they? Are they nipping and biting? Do they understand the rules of the house? How do they treat other people? How do they treat other dogs? All of those things are what determines what kind of resources we control and not control.
Yeah, I really like your litmus test of, you know, does the dog get off when you ask them to?
Yeah.
Because
do they stop barking when you ask them to?
Yeah,
not yelling at them.
Right.
Not saying it 50 times.
Yeah.
Literally, if our dogs bark, we can say, hey, quiet. Done. That's all we have to do.
Yeah.
Not because of the command quiet. It's because there's a respect there.
Yeah. And there's an understanding that your word has your words have value.
I don't want to have to yell at my dog in order to listen to me or have to say it a bunch of times. I want to be able just to give a normal speaking command and have the dog say, cool, I'm happy to listen.
And to your point, like if you delay access to these resources, if you delay these things, you're going to get there faster. Like, you know, if they don't have opportunity to make mistakes, if you're giving them great information and they are behaving like an angel and you give them this opportunity and it goes wrong, it's easier to fix the problem. If you're struggling with a behavior, whatever the thing is, take inventory of the things that they have access to, of the opportunities they have to be wrong, and figure out, geez, what am I doing wrong here? What choices am I making that I need to, you know, show my dog that I have better leadership skills? Because it's all on you. You know, they're just doing dog things. They're trying to figure out how to live in our world. So you need to be giving them better information. A quick reminder that we are supporting the National Canine Cancer Fund with our foundation with our stream tonight. Anonymous donation of $5 to the NCCF.
Thank you
very much. So if you join the stream live, we are excited to collect and donate to the NCCF because canine cancer is a very near and dear to our hearts, and the Canine Foundation offers research support for dogs going through it, and it's a really worthy cause that we believe in. We have to talk about redirection and
really
interruption.
Like this.
Okay.
Throw that up there.
Okay. From James, great question.
Yeah,
James.
I think James is a student. I once shared frustration at not reaching my dog, reaching my dog as trained. The trainer's question was priceless. When did you reach the stage that you no longer needed to learn? I love that.
Mm-hmm.
That's so good. Training never ends.
It's true.
Is the moral of the story.
Right.
Because dogs aren't robots. They're living, breathing creatures, and they need training all of the time. So that's great. Lots of people are like, well, when do I have to stop doing that? Well, there's lots of things that you can do less, but then sometimes it's like, I always say dog training is like putting gas in the car. Like, you don't just put gas in your car once and then, like, you just drive it forever and ever and ever. You have to keep filling it up from time to time. Same thing with the dogs. You can set a wonderful thing, but then you gotta keep up with stuff so that their training stays sharp all of the time.
In true dog trainer fashion, Kale redirected the point that I was making in a certain amount of time. Do you know how long you have to redirect or interrupt your dog so that they can connect the behavior with your interruption? Do you know how much time that is? How long do you have when your dog is barking, your dog is jumping up, and when you give them information, when you say, hey, knock that off, or ah, ah, or whatever the thing is, how much time can elapse for the dog to be able to connect those two things? Do you know? I'd love to, let me know in the chat. When we talk about redirection, it could be any behavior that you don't want. When we're talking about something like digging in the yard, it's really important to think of, like, when did they start doing the thing? Because the moment they start doing the thing, digging in the flower garden or chewing on the bicycle tires or doing the thing that you just drives you crazy and you can't stop, the moment they start is when they start feeling good about it. In the absence of information, they're going to think that whatever feels good or tastes good is the right thing. So this is why supervision is important. See a lot of answers in the chat. See, 1 second, 1 second, 2 seconds, 1 second. It's 1 second. You know, between the time when your dog starts to, let's say, whatever, chew on something, and you say, hey, knock that off. You have about 1 second to connect those things. Or when you give them that information and you get over and you redirect them away from it, you don't have a lot of time. So don't wait too long. This comes back to that barking thing. You know, that that opportunity to redirect those dogs that are barking in the living room. If they rehearse it, it feels good for long enough. They just, it feels good. They're happy to bark. I'm trying to think of like other good redirection opportunities. Could be pulling on the leash. Pulling on the leash is an important one. If your dog is to pull and pull and pull and pull and pull, they're going to think that pulling's okay. So the moment they start to pull is when you need to change directions. It's when you need to bring them in back in at your side. You need to do something so you can get that leash loose again.
They must have to wash their windows a lot.
I would think so. Yeah. Be covered with doggy slobber.
Dog slobber everywhere.
Yeah. Redirection, interrupting behaviors, timing is maybe the most important part of the of understanding dog training, that we can literally, you can take it in tonight and know that you need to be faster. If, let's say, house training, if you come in to a room and your puppy's had an accident somewhere and you don't see it, you can't do anything about it. You can't do anything about it. Nothing is going to do any good. The moment's gone. That's why management and supervision using a puppy house line is exactly the kind of thing that you need to be doing with that dog in training. They're going to have an opportunity to have access to that room at some point, or I mean, we hope. They're going to have an opportunity to, you know, have a little bit more independence, but not right now, not while they're in training, because you need, you have 1 second to make a difference in their training. Getting to the point where we talk about, okay, well, I have my dog out of their crate or their kennel, or I have them free with me a lot. You know, they, I'm on the piano, I'm practicing piano, I'm working on work. They're just sort of meandering around the office. Let's talk about why that's not the right approach. People think a lot that, oh, if my dog's out and, you know, they're around me, they're just going to listen to me and love me because I give them all these opportunities. Let's talk about why that's not a good way to approach dog training.
Yeah. We do want you to spend a lot of time with your dog, but we want you to spend quality time with your dog. It's not really about quantity. It's about how are you doing it? You know, and playing the piano and working on work require your attention to be elsewhere. And so if your puppy is bombing around and they've been chewing on the electrical cord for, you know, a good 5 minutes before you finished your song, then, you know, that's not very good quality time together because you're not really paying attention. We like to be a little bit more intentional with the interactions that we have with our puppies. So there's lots of times that when me and my puppy are together, I'm doing something with them, training, playing, whatever it might be, we're actively doing something together, but I also have some downtime with my puppies as well. That downtime could consist of, you know, maybe watching TV, and I'll sit on the, I'll pull a big dog bed over and I'll put it on the ground and lean against the couch, have my puppy with me, and I'll, you know, hold a bone in my hand and let my puppy lie and chew on their little bone with me while we're together watching a show. I don't just let them wander around the living room. I teach them at nighttime we were going to be calm or just going to chill. So they learn just to come and hang out. Now that's, the dogs know to do that now. Yeah. They know to be calm. You know, if I have a Zoom call or if I have something lengthy, then I'll have my puppy with me, but I'll pull the crate right over, put them in the crate, I'll put them right beside me. We're spending time together. You know, we're in the same room. The puppy's listening to my voice. They're with me. But in saying that, I also firmly believe, that strongly believe, I should say, that the puppies also need to spend time by themselves, so that they aren't learning to be too dependent on us. So maybe sometimes when I'm working or I'm busy or I'm making dinner or whatever it might be, and I can't do the puppy and do all the other 100 things at the same time, then I put the puppy in the crate away from me. So that if I have to go leave the house or if I have to do something, my puppy's already been used to being crated in a situation where they can't see or hear me. And that's done when I'm home. So they don't say every time you put me in there, you leave. So the quality time can be spent in many different ways. But it's always intentional. I don't just let my puppy run around the house and then hope to heck that everything's going okay. It's like having a baby. You wouldn't let your baby, your toddler, you know, be in the living room doing their own thing as you're making dinner. Right. Yeah. You sure hope you wouldn't be doing that, because who knows what they could be touching, getting into, hurting themselves, swallowing, whatever. And puppies are the same way. They are getting into mischief. They're learning bad habits, or they're just learning to do their own thing and not be with you. So that's where that quality time comes in.
Someone would say, well, I worry about crate guilt. And to Kale's point, if you're spending enough quality time with your dog,
you shouldn't feel guilty.
You won't feel guilty because they're ready to go to have a nap. They're ready to sleep. Yeah. You should be doing, we have so many great videos that talk about this. I mean, I don't even know where to start to suggest which one you should watch first. But we talk about physical exercise, mental exercise, you know, a good house training schedule so that you're not worried about whether or not they're going to have an accident in there. But if you're really working your butt off to give your dog good information and the right amount of input, then crate guilt isn't even a thing.
Yeah. And puppies are a lot of work. You know, you need to have a puppy at a time where you have an opportunity to devote putting some energy and focus into the puppy. You know, if you have a house full of kids and you're busy and you got lots of things going on, that's a really hard time to raise a puppy properly. You can do it, you know, you can do anything. But it does take a lot of work. And I know that if I've spent time, you know, my dog's been exercised, my dog's been fed, my dog's gone to the bathroom, they've used their brain a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't feel guilty in the slightest putting them in the crate, because I know that they've been very well taken care of. They can go and do their thing. Puppies need to sleep a lot during the day as well. Sometimes people don't let them sleep a lot because they think they have to entertain them the whole time. And then you actually train your puppy to be too busy. Teach them to have an off switch. Do your thing and then go and chill out. Rest, be calm, learn to just chill out, and then come out and, you know, rinse, wash, and repeat. Just keep doing it all over again.
What would you say if Five did something really well?
I would say yes.
Yeah, you probably would. fast-tracking good leadership is easy if you're making some of these, you know, simple choices, changes in your day-to-day. It's easier to fix problems faster if you are exercising things like good, decent follow-through, putting your dog in situations where they're less likely to be successful. If you're making them earn the reward just a little bit, identifying natural training opportunities, you're going to have tons of them, especially now that you're looking for them. I have confidence that you're going to find even some that we didn't even talk about. Understanding that you need to control the resources, not waiting too long to redirect the behaviors you don't like, and focusing on quality time instead of the quantity of time with your dog. Tonight, I think we raised $166 for the National Canine Cancer Foundation. You know what? Let's do it again.
Yeah.
Let's do another, maybe the next live stream we'll do that too. Thank you to everyone who's donated to the NCCF. We do so appreciate good. It. Huge thank you to our Heart Talk supporters and our team in blue in the chat. Do you put on music for your dog when you leave your house? You know, do you have like music that just fills the room with calming, stress reducing sound? We created some for you. It's in Apple Music.
It's relaxing for humans, too.
It is, too. Yeah, it's on Apple Music, on Spotify. We also have a YouTube channel called McCann Dogs Music. At the end of tonight's stream, we're going to send you there so you can check it out. And use it at your with caution, because you might fall asleep in front of the TV. With all of the teaching, all of the training, all of the things we've talked about tonight, the rest, my friends, well, that is up to you.